Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. The Road to Autonomy is brought to you in part by Stantec Generation AV. Stantec Generation AV combines some of the most experienced AV experts in the industry with the resources of a global engineering firm. Stantec Generation AV provides education, consulting, assessment, and guidance to any industry interested in autonomous vehicles. Learn more at Stantec.com. Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. I'm your host, Grayson Prulte. On today's episode, we're absolutely honored to have Rashad Youssef, Chief Product Officer, BrightDrop. Rashad, welcome to the podcast, sir.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited to have you here because BrightDrop vans are cool and BrightDrop vans are the future. You're really building something special over there. And it raises the big question, why was January 2021 the right time to launch BrightDrop?
Great question. So let me just start by saying how cool they are, yes, but also how relevant it is. It's certainly been the case that we've been in this sort of future of retail world for quite some time, straddling between e-commerce and how people relate to different retail channels in general. The pandemic has certainly accelerated the adoption of sort of delivery in general, but it's become extraordinarily relevant. January 2021 was a great opportunity to announce what BrightDrop was going to do because it was a real date in terms of our ability to deliver. So today we have vehicles in the field performing deliveries in the LA area and very much with the ability to deliver the decarbonization goals of our customers and with the aspiration of really changing the efficiencies of how things get delivered. Today, we're seeing growth, an estimated growth of the delivery traffic of about 78% by 2030. That's a compounded increase of 36% per year. And that really has a tremendous impact, especially in the top 100 cities. So there was really a tremendous sense of urgency to bring a product to market that could be differentiated and really have impact on the way goods get moved.
Not only did you bring a product to market, you delivered a product. As you said, the product's out in the field. Your customers are using it. 1 year after announcing, you delivered a product. I repeat, you delivered a product to FedEx in December 2021. How was that possible? Was it the magic of GM? How were you able to do that?
Sure. So obviously, it's no easy feat to bring a vehicle to market, and especially a vehicle of this characteristics and with the scale projections that we have. To date, we've received over 25,000 orders for the EV600, and it's a combination of extreme creativity on the part of the broader GM organization, of which we are a part of. We were spun off by General Motors in this sort of turbocharged mode of, can they address a need in the market in a very timely manner? And straight through to that promise. It took 14 months to put a vehicle on the road. During that time, you have to incorporate a tremendous amount of learnings from studies in the field, as well as the ability to find a vehicle platform that can accommodate those needs and truly tailor it for the use case. And I can speak more about that later, but it was really a combination of everyone coming together within the broader GM organization to figure out how can you do things differently with tremendous amount of creativity, but with the safety and the know-how and the ability to bring things to scale with the right economics that GM is used to.
25,000 orders of the Zevo 600, that's really impressive. But I want to highlight your competitive advantage that you have over every competitor, the ability to manufacture and scale vehicles. The ability to manufacture, to me, that is your competitive advantage. We saw it with the turnaround that you delivered to FedEx, and now it's been 4 months since the FedEx vans have been delivered. They're out in the wild. They're being used by FedEx. What product feedback have you received from FedEx during that four-month period?
Yeah, so a couple of clarifications before I speak to the feedback itself. It's not just getting the vehicles out of the factory. We've really learned since December what it means to have the vehicles in the field and how incredibly prepared we are to support those early deployments. So it's not just enough to have the vehicle come out of the factory. there is a tremendous amount of heavy lift involved in supporting customers, especially when they're global customers whose business depends on the wheels they're using, right? And I think that speaks volumes to the feedback that we've been receiving, not just from the drivers. Look, it's incredibly fun to drive an electric vehicle with the acceleration, with the characteristics that we've put in the field already, and enjoy a quiet ride when you're on the road 8 hours a day. People are extremely thrilled to see not just the results of the analysis that went into creating the product to begin with, the stepping height, the size of the closures, the positioning of all aspects of the HMI, of how the experience comes together. That's all been very positive. But what's also been positive is our ability to react to real world situations. We were capable of putting software fixes to, let's say, deal with charging inadequacies on our low voltage system before we had a real fix on the field, right? So the ability for us to operate within the context of the broader GM and have access to that service infrastructure has really paid off for our customers. And we're seeing a lot of very positive feedback on that front as well.
Is the over-the-air update, is that one way that you're incorporating the feedback that you're getting from your partners and from the drivers?
Absolutely. I mean, it's still early days. We're very keen to see how far we can take this. You know, we've seen over-the-air updates on vehicles in the past for consumer-like features. But in this particular case, we're utilizing that in the context of a fleet. So we can bring high value needed features and over time integrate ever more closely with the infrastructure of our customers as a result.
You hit the nail on the head. This has been a common theme in this podcast, is integrating with the infrastructure. And I give you a lot of credit for understanding the infrastructure where you're going, because if the infrastructure is not there, your great vans are not going to be able to operate at peak performance, which raises the question, GM, you know, what Mary Barr has done has been phenomenal. In your opinion, what is the big strategic advantage of being part of GM?
I don't think there's any one aspect of it. It is really an accumulation of things. You know, that instant credibility that we have today wouldn't happen without the legacy of General Motors. The strong foundation that we have across any number of things. Think of the role of OnStar on telematics, which provides us an extremely robust foundation for the work that we're doing. Think of the reach from a serviceability point of view, which is incredibly critical for our customers. All of those things come into play, but also the ability to rely on a number of GM platforms, including Ultium for our batteries or Altify for our software-defined vehicle. All of those things come battle-tested for us and give us a tremendous platform to build on top of.
If I'm a customer, let's just call me Acme Logistics and Delivery Services. To me, I want to buy vans from you because I trust GM. And I know, as I said this earlier, you have the ability to deliver the vehicle on time, not, hi, place the order to get your vehicle 5 years later. Hopefully we don't run out of money. No, you have the ability to, you're well capitalized and the ability to deliver the vans. That's incredible. Then you highlighted the Ultium batteries. The Ultium batteries have been incredible engineering. Do you see as those batteries get denser, and the longer ranges are available, will those eventually work their way into the BrightDrop vans?
Absolutely. I mean, we're looking at a, let's say, extremely robust form factor with a use case that has an incredible reach, right? So the delivery vans, the delivery infrastructure is going to continue to grow and evolve, but we can innovate within. So the ability for us to incorporate new chemistries and new technologies with regards to the battery itself is a commitment from BrightDrop from day one. Hence the reliance on over-the-air updates, on software-defined vehicle principles, so that we can really bring those improvements to our customers over time.
You're constantly focused on improvements. Now, I want to get into the fun part now, product. You have a beautiful product. It's well-designed. What competitors does that beautiful product offer BrightDrop over your competitors?
So first thing I want to highlight is we have products, as in multiple. We have different form factors. Today in the market, we have an EV600. It's a 600 cubic feet version of what we're doing. And we have a smaller form factor, the 410, which is 410 cubic feet. But we also have Trace, which is an electric cart that allows us to containerize last mile. The ability for us to, you know, within the sorting facility, designate which packages are going to be delivered where, and pre-containerize those in our vehicles, and then use human runners. These are little carts that have propulsion assistance. In other words, a single operator can push 200 pounds worth of load with ease all day long. Allows us to have a really compelling solution set that complements the vehicle, that reduces the time spent at the curb in dense urban environments. We were able to prove that with FedEx, we could reduce the number of routes. We could gain delivery efficiency by 25% by simply using technology that's tightly coupled together. We then use our software to tightly stitch our traces, our electric carts, with our electric vehicles to be able to achieve greater efficiency. So that's a very different mindset for a vehicle company, to approach this as a full solution end-to-end, and to partner closely with our customers on what is the right deployment model, how to make things work, and how to integrate within the context of their software infrastructure to make this all work.
And you integrated the trace into the vehicle because the vehicle has, and I'm going to call it one of your coolest features, you've got the rapid load vehicle concept. The video on your site, for listeners, go to brightdrop.com, watch the video. It's extremely well done. Talk about the concept, how it's integrated, because if I'm a delivery driver, I say, wow, BrightDrop made my life easier. This is phenomenal. Please, Mr. Employer, please get BrightDrop vans.
Yes, and thank you for touching on making my life easier. Look, today, it is definitely the case that we're tackling multiple things at the same time. I live in San Francisco. I look out of my window. It is not atypical for me to see three deliveries happening at the same time on three different vehicles. And in some cases, two of those vehicles may have the same logos on them. And that's just a function of the fact that to meet consumer demands, the logistic companies have very little choice other than putting more vehicles on the road. And we looked at that and said, look, there must be a better way. There must be a way to drive more efficiencies out of this. And as a result, be able to lessen the burden overall, both on the infrastructure, on the environment, and on the human factor, right? Today, the vehicle only represents a small portion of the overall cost of what it takes to deliver a package to your home or to your place of work. And we think there's a much better way to deploy resources. And the rapid load vehicle is just one way of doing that. The ability to change how vehicles use the curb, for example, back to the example in New York, by putting six electric carts in a vehicle and utilizing human runners is what was used in both Toronto and New York pilots. We could see that a driver could deliver a bunch of goods with very, very short period of time to the curb, and then human runners could go and take care of that, those last 200 meters of the job, and end up with a solution that has a better quality of service for the consumer, because you have access to almost sort of pixel perfect view of where your goods are, and eliminate the sort of dwell time at the curb that vehicles need to impose on the infrastructure today, and create a much safer environment as a result. So it also opens up the pool of people that have access to this kind of work, right? You're now not manually moving 200 pounds of workload every day. You have a vehicle that's optimized for the use case, for what's otherwise, honestly, a very difficult work to do. We see drivers that get in and out of vehicles up to 150 times a day and are carrying packages over very long work hours under quite a bit of pressure, honestly, to meet the demands of today. And we feel that we have a solution set that alleviates a lot of that burden from the human into a system that's much better coordinated.
I love the safer environment. I'm going to give you an example. I used to, years and years ago, I lived in New York City, and between on 57th, between 6th and 7th, right north of the plaza, the UPS, FedEx, all delivery trucks would pile up three across, and the cars had to go like zigzag, like they're running a maze. And then one product here, one product, because you had the department stores and the hotels. How great would it be if BrightDrop products there? They can have a designated parking spot. They can move all their stuff around. It'll make it safer for the pedestrians. It'll make it safer for the driver. So that's going to be really interesting to see as that gets deployed in dense urban environments. So BrightDrop, you have the Zevo 600 and the Zevo 400 are your two models. The Zevo 600 has 600 cubic feet of cargo space and can travel 250 miles on a full battery charge. The Zevo 400 has 400 cubic feet of cargo space and can travel 250 miles on a single charge. Why were those metrics chosen?
Great question. So there's definitely a tremendous amount of thought put into the ride footprint, the cubage to load mass ratio, the ability for us to load six of our e-carts, and the ergonomics of both vehicles. So there's a tremendous amount of thought put into a number of trade-offs to get to that configuration. 600 is definitely the magic number for many of our suburban and urban areas. 410 is better suited for certain geographies and markets, as well as dense urban areas. And we're also keeping a close eye on license regulations regarding tonnage for EVs around the world. And that's where those numbers came from. The 250-mile range is actually extremely generous considering how these workloads are assigned. A typical route is significantly less than 250 miles. But in the early days of electrification, we very much wanted to tune into the needs of our customers and the fact that there is a window of time required for the infrastructure to catch up with their charging needs, and having, let's say, a more generous range is actually a huge enabler for adoption. So that's where that number comes from. Today, the vehicles that are out in the field actually have the ability to not charge every day. So that makes it a lot easier to incorporate them into operational fleets. It's really about ease of doing business. It's really about showing our customers that we get it and that we're with them through their deployments.
Also, from a driver standpoint, was this partially done to avoid range anxiety if the driver goes out? No, I don't want to go in that. I might not be able to charge him. Or was that part good in the calculation as well?
That is exactly right. It's we know that we're going to be ahead in our deployments compared to how infrastructure can be installed. That sometimes the timelines for that are sometimes a little bit out of our customers' controls. So giving them a generous range is key in the early days while we learn and evolve. So 250 miles is indeed greater than a typical route is, but something that our customers take advantage of when they in the early deployments.
Another one of your customers is Walmart. Walmart's an incredibly innovative company. They're all in on the future of mobility. They're doing really great things. They've ordered the Zevo 600 and the Zevo 400. Why did Walmart make the strategic decision to order both of your models and not to say, okay, Rashid, we're going to go all in on the 600?
Yeah, that's a good question. So their decarbonization goals are admirable and a formidable partner for us. And they're looking at a wide range of applications, everything from grocery delivery to package delivery. So their needs are quite broad, and we're very happy to provide them with the right suite of products to address those needs. So yes, this is not a one-size-fits-all, and we're partnering very closely with them in terms of how we want to deploy all of our assets with them.
It'd be really neat for Walmart.com. Maybe they use the 400. Maybe perhaps for the Walmart groceries, they use the neighborhood stores, they use the 600. It'll be really interesting to see how Walmart uses it. Walmart, I can't wait to see you using BrightDrop vans in the wild here. Rashid, from an infrastructure standpoint, what is needed to operate a BrightDrop van as part of a large commercial fleet? Obviously, you have to have the charging, but are there any other infrastructure needs that you have to do in order to operate a BrightDrop van?
Luckily enough, no. I mean, for us, the infrastructure really is key from a software point of view. So the software assets that we're developing internally that let's say, tightly stitch our e-cards and our electric vehicles together, that's a huge component of what makes this deployment successful. But in terms of physical requirements for fleets to use our solution set, It's really about sorting out charging and really benefiting from the advantages of, let's say, the lower maintenance requirements and overall lower total cost of ownership requirements, honestly, of electric vehicles. So that's really what people can take advantage of. So I would say it's the contrary. I think there's less requirements in our world than in the world they live in today.
Lower maintenance, lower cost of ownership, lower carbon. That's a win-win-win.
That's exactly
that's
after.
Where it's coming. Everybody's after it. The van market's hot. It's an extremely hot market. How do you see the electric van market evolving over the coming years? It seems seemingly you get an announcement here, you get an announcement there of new electric vans coming online. But again, I'm going to harp on this. They don't have the manufacturing capabilities that BrightDrop has. How do you see that market evolving over the years?
Yeah, it's extremely relevant in the sense that today we see the number of, let's say, package miles going up and the number of passenger miles not corresponding to the same level of growth, right? So it is an extremely relevant from a decarbonization point of view. These are vehicles that are working all day long. They're not commuter vehicles that sit in a garage all day. So that's where we see a tremendous amount of attention being paid to the space, is because the role they play in society. And it's a great place for us to be. Today, we find ourselves in a let's say, formidable space, because we were able to bring a product to market before anybody else at scale. But we are certainly aware that there's other players in the market that are going to be pursuing this opportunity. So we're going to be evolving, and we're going to stay ahead of the curve. We see the opportunity of sort of right-sizing the vehicle to meet the demands, and we see price pressures down the line as well that we want to be able to respond to.
That's fair. How do you see the BrightDrop product evolving? Will it come from feedback from your large fleet customers? Hey, BrightDrop, can you add this feature? Hey, would it be great if you move this? Is that kind of how the product will evolve?
I think there's two ways to look at this. Number one, we have incredible partners in our launch customers. I couldn't ask for more representative global players than Walmart and FedEx. Now, Walmart literally being sort of the largest retailer in the world, and FedEx being the best representative of the delivery business. So there's definitely no end of learnings that we're already seeing today. But the future of retail still needs to be written, right? Today, we're adapting existing tools for a commerce model that didn't really exist that long ago. So we still need to do a tremendous amount of forward-looking thinking and in many cases sort of go back to that white sheet of paper and say, look, how would you containerize goods to be delivered to the home? How do you get to great levels of efficiency so you don't have to put more and more vehicles on the road, the more packages you have to move? That sort of thing. So I think it's both a tremendous amount of innovation from coming from in-house and really observing where the trends are going in the future, and then learning with the journey with our customers.
I want to highlight something that you said, because you're spot on. The future of retail has to be written. You're right. We do not know the future of retail. Some of the larger brands, still, you cannot buy all their products online. And I think we're going to start seeing the future is pressure on the supply chains, where if you have brand A and they're saying, okay, well, you deliver this using an internal combustion engine. Oh, wait a second. Why can't you use that delivering an electric van? And you might even see ESG scores assigned to the decarbonization as you move through the entire supply chain, which is going to benefit yourself, BrightDrop, and it will also benefit the other van companies and its benefit society as a whole. So that's going to be really interesting. And then you got the product, which we talked about earlier, the BrightDrop Trace. Well, how will that evolve? Will that eventually become autonomous, or how do you see that product evolving?
Great question. I would say autonomy is going to play a role at the right point in time for both delivery of goods in public roadways, as well as how you solve those last 200 yards. But what we're really after here is creating the right economic model for our customers and enabling them to create the right experience for consumers. So that's really just sort of an overall tool. The ability for all of us to work in this sort of omni-channel world that we're in today, where goods are moving in both directions, and the ability to decarbonize and create a safer environment for those goods to move, that's what we're acting on today. That's what we see as the real opportunity. So we're putting a lot of emphasis on not just the electric vehicle and the features that go within, but also what is the e-cart of the future, and what are let's say, the different form factors that are required, whether, you know, we need to enable one human to be able to move multiple of them, or what is the right level of technology to incorporate in that form factor.
Will the BrightDrop software platform, will that be the glue that holds all these visions together?
Exactly. That is very core to our thinking from day one, is that sort of tightly stitching our infrastructure with our customers' infrastructure and making sure that everything works in concert.
We talked a lot about DCAR, but now I want to dive right into it, because the final mile delivery of goods by vehicles contributes 15% of CO2 emissions. Has BrightDrop made any estimates with regards to the amount of carbon that can be reduced by using electric vans as compared to traditional vans?
Absolutely. There's a lot of models that we lean on, but really the key to unlocking the benefits here is to create the right assets for our customers to connect with the infrastructure so that they are in the best position to take advantage of the economics of electrification and the environment impact. In other words, how do they have access to green energy as opposed to brown energy? What is the right charging model that we can apply to our fleets, and also paying very close attention to the overall life cycle of how these products are created and what their second life is. So that is another area where being part of the broader GM really helps us, because we can really look at not just what is decarbonization from a moving one energy source to another, but really looking at the overall impact of the product.
Nail on the head. How cool would it be, let's say, you Acme Fleet Logistics customer, they put in microgrids and they start charging their vans overnight on renewable energy. That'll have a major positive impact. The vans go out into the wild, they do their deliveries, they come home at night and they charge on renewable energy. Now we're really starting to get towards decarbonization.
I love it. And it is that opportunity that we have today. And that's why the deployments today make sense. These vehicles are, by and large, operating during business hours, because that's when people expect the deliveries. There is a generous window for them to charge, which gives us optimization opportunities. And we're looking at sort of the evolution of that partnering with charging infrastructure firms, again, in the context of the broader GM, which gives us a much larger footprint, and partnering with our customers to make sure that what we're doing is harmonized with their decarbonization goals.
If you look at harmonization, the van is extremely well designed. What advantages do you have designing an all-electric van as compared to a traditional gas van?
The most immediate one is when you drive it. It just feels amazing. But in our models, you know, we do think it is a much safer vehicle because of the way we've contented it. We have tremendously generous ADAS capabilities. Our driving assistance systems are definitely sort of way ahead of what the current fleets have today. Think of forward collision warnings. Think of sort of the applicability of cameras and the overall sort of ergonomic considerations placed in the vehicle. The other advantages that we see from the ground up is sort of the built-in telemetry and the compute capabilities of the vehicle that tie intimately with the infrastructure of our customers. And the overall electrification savings that I mentioned earlier, in our models, we modeled 7,500 savings per year compared to an ICE equivalent. And our customers' models, in the case of FedEx, sometimes show much larger numbers in the order of 12,000 per year, which pretty much brings the vehicle even to price parity, which is fantastic. So we are definitely seeing, and we'll monitor over time, exactly what the overall total cost of ownership is for an electric vehicle. But there's clearly a positive case to be made.
A positive case, understatement, $7,500 a year in savings. If I'm a CFO, I'm banging on your chief revenue, chief sales officer's door and saying, okay, I can save $7,500 a year by operating the BrightDrop vans. I want to order them in droves. And it's pretty obvious that's what's happening with your customers, because they're ordering them by the thousands. It's really incredible. It's not this, well, I'll order one, I'll order two. No, I'll take 1,000. I'll take 10,000. I'll eventually going to get 100,000 orders. So well done, BrightDrop. On the design standpoint, you were at Zoox. We first met years and years ago at Zoox. Zoox has a design culture. How did Zoox influence how you approach design and product?
I've been very fortunate to have worked for companies where design played a critical role. And I would say that for Zoox, and even for companies like Neo that I joined later, design, good design for me in this space comes with purpose. In other words, you're really looking for elegant ways to bring simplicity to complex situations and come with the right level of resolution, whether it's the placement of a cup holder or the right sizing of a cargo area so it's easy to maneuver within. Certainly the problem space at Zoox was quite, I would say, challenging in the sense that, you know, people hadn't seen what a robotaxi would look like in the future. So there was a lot of sort of first problems to be resolved and addressed. And in the case of BrightDrop, the same holds true. We're very much looking at very new form factors. We're looking at how to make a usability core element of what we're doing, because we see the challenges that companies are having retaining and hiring their workforce. So we're definitely applying the same principles here to create a product that's truly differentiated and at the same time, extremely practical in its day-to-day application.
You're clearly thinking through the design. Isn't there an element on the BrightDrop vans where you measured it, the height of the vehicle so the driver can get it in easier and out easier?
That's what we refer to as step in height, but it doesn't stop there. It's really the position of the seat, the overall ergonomics. And we look at comfort, not just in terms of like what is the right seating area or the seating configuration and what are the right features to have, but really what does it mean to get in and out of the vehicle 150 times a day? Like in the real world, what does that actually mean? Where are there strain points, when you reach to close a door or when you're accessing the bulkhead? Or where do you want your quick cargo access areas to be in the front cabin, which are typically sort of improvised in the existing design? How do we get to a level of efficiency? So there's definitely an element of safety, which is extremely important. In other words, we're trying to avoid repetitive stress injuries. There's an element of comfort because retaining drivers is extremely important as well. And there's an element of seconds count, which is the reality of the business. So we want to make it as easy as possible for the vehicle to help the driver throughout the day.
Is this why the decision was made to build the BrightDrop vans from the ground up on day one?
That is exactly right. I mean, there's always that sort of first principles white sheet of paper opportunity that can only be taken advantage of so many times. And this was definitely the right time to jump on it. The team definitely put a lot of emphasis in understanding the context in which the work is being performed, in understanding our user, in this case, the operator and driver, in understanding all of the, let's say, details around the vehicle. Right, the telemetry, the interfaces that go into managing a fleet, the different personas involved in maintaining these vehicles, to really look at the holistic solution.
So your customers' drivers have to be over the moon happy driving these vans.
Except for the fact that they don't have enough of them, but yes.
That's a great problem for your business office to have, though.
Yes, indeed.
So we're seeing the demand for urban last miles estimated to grow 78%. I repeat, 78% by 2030. That's 8 years away. That's not George Jetson future. That's only 8 years away. As we work towards that future, in your opinion, what is the future of last mile delivery?
I mean, luckily for people like me, it hasn't been written yet. You know, I think it's up to us as part of the industry to really shape how to create something that is truly sustainable. And really how to meet the customer where they want to be. I feel that like a lot of this sort of omni-channel retail presence that exists today kind of evolved organically, and people are leaning on 3PLs and logistics firms that happen to be best suited. But in the context of electrification, there's an opportunity for us to revisit the toolset and really create an environment that allows for delivery of goods, delivery of perishables, that accommodates the ability for people to return goods with ease, and do that at scale without it being sort of a linear impact on the environment and on the road infrastructure and on the congestion in our cities. And that's really what we're after.
There's a massive opportunity to rethink delivery. You also brought the very valid point of returns. That's an issue that still has to be tackled in dense urban environments, do you have a drop-off? And then what happens when you go into suburban? But if they use a bright drop electric van, it can use less carbon emissions. So go bright drop, go electric fans. And Rashid, as we look to wrap up this insightful conversation, what would you like our listeners to take away with them today?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. I really, the number one thing for me is the impact of what we're doing. The fact that we are decarbonizing vehicles that are in use every day. And, you know, that the work that these vehicles are performing is ever more important and relevant in our lives.
I'll sum it up this way. BrightDrop is having a positive impact on society because the future is bright, the future is autonomous, and the future is BrightDrop. Rashid, thank you so much for coming on the Road to Autonomy today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Real pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Road to Autonomy podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Want to get in touch? Follow us on Twitter at Road to Autonomy or email podcast@brulteco.com. The Road to Autonomy is produced by Brulte & Company. The views and opinions expressed on the Road to Autonomy podcast do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Brulte & Company. The content discussed on this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as legal, tax, investment, or business advice.